Hello and welcome to the Today's Homeowner Weekly Podcast. We're here to help you with the challenges we all face as homeowners. I'm Danny Lifford.
And I'm Joe Truini. And each week, Danny and I are here on the podcast to answer any and all home improvement questions.
And we want to hear from you. Send us your questions or comments at todayshomeowner.com/podcast. Today's Homeowner Podcast is brought to you by The Home Depot, how doers get more done. This week, we help a homeowner that's having a real problem with a very large drywall ceiling. It's starting to crack a little bit. Should it all come out, or can you veneer over it? Also, if you're looking up at your air conditioning vents and you're seeing a lot of mildew, a lot of dust, why is that happening and what can you do to prevent it? It's a lot simpler than you might think. Vinyl siding is set up to be very low maintenance, but every now and then it starts looking a little dull, and that's oxidation. What can you do to remove that oxidation? We'll share with you a couple different ways to do that. Also, metal roofing. We always get questions about metal roofing. We're going to tackle a couple of those during this podcast as well. Joe, what about the simple solution coming up?
All right, Dan, I have a quick tip on how to keep wooden patio furniture on your patio without wobbling back and forth, and also how to prevent it from soaking up all that moisture and possibly rotting the legs of the furniture.
Perfect. Okay, let's get started. We have Jim on the line right now from Thousand Oaks, California. Jim, tell us all about it and welcome to the show.
Longtime viewer and fan of your show.
Thank you.
So I live in a townhome. It's a two-story townhome. Over the years, I have a knockdown texture on my ceiling. It started to crack and bubble in certain places. Now, this has taken place again over about 15 years. So I wanted to have that repaired. So I've had different contractors come in and give me two different solutions. One, scrape it, but they're fearful that the whole ceiling might have to be scraped. And it's a very large area. So it's a sloped vaulted ceiling. And the area is about 18 by 32 feet. So long story short, most of them were advising to place drywall over the existing ceiling. They think the scraping part would be too big of a job and too costly. So my question is, can you place drywall over existing drywall on a ceiling? Is that structurally sound?
Well, I'll tell you what, that advice probably is good. And the answer to your question is yes, without a doubt. A lot of people don't realize that there is quarter-inch drywall available, which is exactly what you would want to do to veneer over what you have. And I kind of agree with maybe some of the other contractors' opinion, because the thing is, if you tried to scrape these isolated spots and then try to do the knockdown finish to blend it in, boy, I tell you, with such a large visible ceiling, I'm not really sure you could ever make that blend in. And even though maybe your friends coming over, glancing up at the ceiling, may never notice it, Jim will notice it every time he walks in the room. So that's the that's the challenge on that. Also, whatever has caused this to crack, maybe all the cracking is not complete now. So you may repair these six or seven areas that you have, and another six or seven areas pop up the next year after you completely finish it. So if you want to get this completely behind you, I would recommend veneering over it with quarter-inch drywall. But here's what's going to have to happen. You're going to have to really identify where each and every one of those ceiling joists are, which in this case with the vaulted ceiling, by the way, I'm seeing the pictures here, and this is an incredible-looking room here. You'll have to identify every one of those ceiling joist or roof rafters, wherever this material is nailed and screwed to, and pop lines on every single one of them. And then I would insist on them using screws, because first of all, the screw has to go through the quarter inch drywall, the half inch drywall that's there, and at least an inch and a half into the rafter itself. That way, everything's secure. You've got screws, not nails, which may be part of the problem that you have on the ceiling now. Finish it, go with a smooth ceiling, a textured ceiling, a popcorn ceiling, whatever you want on that, and then this problem's behind you. Now, I'm making this sound so simple, but it is a pretty tough job, because you have scaffolding, you have, you know, you have to get the right contractor in there, you've got a lot of cover-up to do, but Jim, I really think that's the way to get it behind you.
Okay, no, I appreciate that, and I do agree. I think the problem is this house was built in the 70s, and I think they used nails instead of screws, and I think those nails are just popping, which is causing, it's just going to have future problems down the road. So thank you very much. I really appreciate your knowledge and advice for my ceiling project.
Well, certainly, Jim. And I appreciate you saying about the television show, which opens up the door for me to brag just a tad if I can. And in just a few days, I'll be headed to Pasadena to attend the Emmy Awards, which I am of Today's Homeowner Television Show is up for an Emmy Award this year, and we hope to walk down the aisle and bring the hardware back home with us. So we're looking forward to flying into California in just a few days.
Well, I hope I will watch and hope you will win.
Well, I appreciate it, Jim, and I appreciate you being a part of the show today. And if we can help you in the future, let us know.
Well, do. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Okay. All right. You as well. Well, Joey, he took that news pretty easily there because,
You're
looking at this ceiling, and my notes say 17 by 53 ceiling. I think he said something similar to that. Either way,
18 by 32.
Yeah,
it's still a
gigantic
huge room.
Ceiling. Yeah. It looks to me like this thing is, I don't know, that might be 20 foot up off the ground, and you're going to have a tough time finding that right contractor. But with when you're talking about California, you're talking about a lot of contemporary homes there.
Right.
So you can expect the drywall contractors are used to some of these soaring vaulted ceilings that they have to deal with. So yeah, I think he'll be able to find someone that can remedy this. And I like his attitude is he doesn't want to do it again. Let's go ahead and get this behind him.
Yeah, exactly. And with the textured ceiling, it's not just paint on drywall, right? So it's a textured ceiling, so it's really thick. And in the photographs, it was like blistering away. And that's why I think the professionals were absolutely correct. If we start scraping, what are we going to do? Scrape this whole ceiling? Then we're going to have to patch it. It's much better to go over. Now, the other option, and I might even consider this, I don't know if this would save them time and money or what, but it would certainly give them the opportunity to inspect what's behind there. Just tear out everything that's there. Just tear it out. Put up 5/8 inch or 1/2 inch drywall. Start from scratch. Because this might be a moisture problem. The reason this is blistering off, not only that the texture is 50 years old or whatever, it might be a moisture problem. So he'd be able to re-insulate if he needs to or add more insulation to between the rafters and put up. So that's another option. This way you're starting from scratch, priming it really well, and then painting it. But either way, there's no way to patch and save what's there now. It's just too big a mess.
No, it's going to be something that will haunt him for a
while. Hey, Danny, one other thing, though. Danny talked about coming home with some hardware. If you don't win the Emmy, there are a lot of nice towel racks in the hotel room, doorknobs. So if you want to come home with some hardware, don't be afraid, my buddy.
No,
just take it home.
I want to bring that Emmy, and I told you, I figured out how I can use some threaded rod and some wing bolts and be able to mount that to the front of my truck. I mean, when's the last time you driving down the
That's
road
right.
you see a truck with an Emmy Award on the front
That's
of it?
That's right,
oh, yeah. I'll send you a picture of it, me poised right beside it there.
Yeah, either that or a chain and just wear it around your neck. That would be nice. Yeah. A nice subtle reminder that you won an Emmy.
It's time for our Best New Product segment brought to you by The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Pet owners know the challenge. You let them outside to take care of their business, and they wind up digging in the dirt and bringing it back inside, not to mention the damage they do to the grass outside. So LifeProof with Pet Proof technology designed in artificial turf with pets in mind. It looks and feels just like real grass, but its ultra-flow backing provides a durable protection against dog digging and drains 2 times faster than the industry average, so liquid waste passes right through it and will not puddle up on the turf. The fibers of the carpet are stain resistant, so it's very easy to clean and maintain a consistent appearance. And because the turf separates the dogs from the dirt and the dust, their paws stay nice and clean, and that means so do your floors. So for more information on this LifeProof with Pet Proof technology premium pet turf, log on to HomeDepot.com. So I'm sure that resonates with a lot of our listeners, where you're letting the dog out and constantly worried about them dragging things back in. So that's seemed like a great solution for that issue.
Yeah, we just got a puppy, so I'm definitely, my ears perked up,
right?
So to speak, listening to this. Of course, we have a 3.5-acre lot, so I'd have to buy a lot of AstroTurf here. It'd look like the LifeProof, pet proof, it'll look like the Astrodome when I'm done. But they do. He just starts digging. I don't know, just picks a spot and digs for some reason. I have no idea why. But
well, I guess you could always put a small fenced area, to the side over there, to be able to try that out.
Because once you train them to go in a certain area, I think they just will go there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Great idea. All right. Well, we're going to go right to some emails here. We did get a tremendous amount of emails this week, and we appreciate each and every one of them. We're going to get to as many as we can. You can send one right now by going to todayshomeowner.com/ask. This came in from Donna down in Florida. We have a 3-year-old mobile home, and all the vents are on our ceiling. We have noticed dirt is accumulating on the outside beyond the metal covers. I've been trying to clean it, but the result is the popcorn sealant material starts coming off, and the dirt is not. Do you have any suggestions on cleaning the area without removing the sealant material? We do plan on removing that in a couple years. We're looking at a photo right now, and it might be something that you see around your home, and it doesn't matter whether you live in a mobile home or where you are. It is very common for the air conditioning grills or registers to come from the ceiling, and you might not look up there very much, but when you do, you might see a little bit of mildew. As Donna is mentioning, a lot of dust around the perimeter of that, and popcorn ceilings, you know, with the texture there, is gonna hold on to that dust quite a bit. So we have two things here. First of all, how do you clean it? And mostly, how do you keep this from happening? Because this is not normal, it's not healthy, and it's not something that you want to continue happening in your home. So first of all, if you have the upholstery brush on your vacuum cleaner, whether it's a central vac or a traditional vac, that's probably a pretty good way of very carefully removing that dust all around there. Of course, using an oxygen bleach or some type of cleaning agent to clean the grill, probably easier just to take those two screws out, soak it a little bit, get it nice and clean, maybe even put a little machine oil on all of the moving parts there, move it around a little bit in case you want to close those dampers from time to time, and then reinstall it. If there's still discoloration around, you can use a mixture of 50% bleach and 50% water in a spray container. Very carefully spray just a little around the perimeter on the ceiling, let it dry. Usually that will pull any of that coloration out. But Joe, what's causing this? Why is there dust? This picture looks so unhealthy when you think of that, introducing it. Give a couple reasons why this is happening and what could be done to prevent it.
First of all, any surface that has a hole in it that's sucking air in or blowing air out is going to create some kind of dust, and it's going to attract it. So that might be part of the reason. It's metal. I mean, I don't know if this has started to rust. Probably has lots of moisture in the air. She's in Florida, you know, with the air conditioning, condensation can create staining. But yeah, I mean, you definitely remove that grill first, because it makes it a lot easier to clean around there. The reason Danny recommends an upholstery brush on a vacuum is you want to be pretty gentle, because if you start removing that popcorn texture, you know, then what? And good luck trying to match it. Yeah, I would do exactly the same thing. My recommendation, if you're going to use bleach instead of chlorine bleach, as Danny said, use oxygen bleach, mix it with warm water, put it in a plant mister. Use warm water just to dissolve it, because oxygen bleach typically comes as a powder. And an oxygen bleach, unlike chlorine bleach, it won't bleach out your clothes. So if you're spraying it and it gets on a couch or a rug, you're not going to find little white spots everywhere. So definitely use that. Don't oversaturate the surface, because you don't want to, you know, get that popcorn ceiling too wet, because then it might pull free. And then what I would do, once it's completely dry and clean, and even if it's not 100% clean, but cleaner than it was, go over it with a stain blocking primer, preferably a restoration primer, and then paint. You could paint just that repaired area, but chances are it might look a little different than the surrounding ceiling. So you may have to paint the whole ceiling. So just be aware of that. But I think those are the recommendations.
And certainly you have to realize so many homes in America have leaky ductwork, and that ductwork can start at your return air. Your return air is pulling air in. Now, if you have a little, you know, breach in that in anywhere, a little crack anywhere at all, it's going to find dust in your home, and it's going to bring it into there, and it's going to go through your system and then deposit on the grills like this. So I think if you have a situation like this, especially a situation that's acute as this is, I would go ahead and make sure that air conditioning contractor inspects every single piece of ductwork and your return air situation, everything, because somewhere it's pulling air in. It can be pulling it in from the attic. It could be pulling it in from that closet where you have your return air. Because so many times, Joe, even if you're very diligent with your filter and changing it on a regular basis, when you take that, the traditional scenario where you have a hallway, you have your air handling unit there. Underneath, you have your grill. Your grill tilts down. You have your filter. Take that filter out. Grab a flashlight and look around in there. It might just scare you a little bit. Sometimes it looks like an old, dark cave. So anytime you're changing that filter, it only takes just a minute or two to take your vacuum cleaner and really clean that very, very well. But again, I would check to see if that is sealed up very, very well. Your air conditioning contractor can take care of that. You know, a very strong trend over the last few years has been to try to create the most low maintenance exterior you possibly can. That's what's fueled a lot of popularity of vinyl siding. But after a while, vinyl siding starts to, in some situations, oxidize a little bit. So it makes it a little more dull looking. That's what's happening with Jennifer in Churchville, Virginia. Jennifer, welcome to the show and tell us about the outside of your home there.
Thank you. I'm so glad to talk to you, Danny and Joe. And we enjoy your show so much. We listen to it every Saturday and then watch your show on Sunday mornings here in our area.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, thank
Great.
You.
Well, I just retired, so my husband doesn't want me to watch your show or listen to the radio show because he says every day I say, I was thinking. And he will say, will you stop thinking, please?
You're creating more projects for you and he to do, right?
Yes, he's retired too. So, oh my goodness, the sky's the limit. so we have vinyl siding. It is 20 years old, and it is oxidizing. And we were wondering what we could do to, you know, we've seen commercials for soft wash and those kinds of things, but we were wondering if there was anything you guys could recommend for us to remove that oxidation and brighten it up a bit.
Okay, we certainly can. And there's a lot of options on that. The good news is it's not really hard to remove it. It doesn't require a lot of scrubbing or any intensity from that standpoint. And several different ways to go. One product that you can buy is something that we recommend a lot for cleaning exteriors is TSP, which is trisodium phosphate, and readily available at any home center, paint store, or anything like that. Follow the instructions, and that works very well. Or you can head into your pantry, grab the white vinegar, and mix about 5 cups of vinegar with 1 gallon of water. And again, you can, you know, use that with a soft scrub brush and so forth in order to get it. The proper use of a pressure washer can also clean it up real well. Joe, what else? What other ideas do you have?
Yeah, Jennifer, the reason that vinyl siding oxidizes when it's exposed to oxygen and sunlight, it interacts with the PVC, the polyvinyl chloride that's in the siding, and you get that chalky discoloration on it. And it does clean off easily enough, and it's mostly harmless, but over time it can cause, if it's not taken care of, the oxidation can make the siding more brittle, so it'll crack and break more easily. So it is important to clean this off. But in any case, yeah, you can use the vinegar and water. If you want a stronger solution, what vinyl siding manufacturers recommend is in 1 gallon of water, you mix 1/3 of a cup of laundry detergent, 2/3 of a cup of household cleaner, such as TSP or Barkeeper's Friend or Comet, something like that. TSP is probably best. Then 1 quart of bleach, of just chlorine bleach, or you could use oxygen bleach. And you mix that up and you scrub the siding. But I would start with just the vinegar and water. That usually works best. And there is a product made specifically for this called Vinyl Renew, and it's spelled R-E-N-U. And it's pretty expensive, but what it does is it instantly restores the original color and luster of faded siding. And it's supposed to last, according to the manufacturer, for 10 years. Now, I don't know how they can make that claim, but that's the claim. But yeah, so it's relatively easy to clean off regardless of what you use. But it is important to clean it off because, as I said, it might make that brittle, the siding brittle. Then if someone hits it with something and it cracks, then you have another problem.
That sounds wonderful. I do have one more question if you
have
time.
Certainly, yes. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
We have been using the wet and forget that you guys advertise, and it works fantastic on our roof, and then we've used it on the siding. But we have faux stone, a fake stone that we installed 30 years ago. Can you use the wet and forget on that stone?
Yeah, you certainly can. Yeah. No problem at all on that. And you know how you just have to give it a little bit of time for it to work. But no, it'll work fine on that.
Oh, the wet and forget, we sprayed it on our roof and it did a wonderful job. So
good.
Really appreciate that tip on that. But
good, sure.
Thank you so much, guys, for your time, and keep doing what you're doing. We thoroughly enjoy it.
Well, our pleasure, Jennifer. Let me give you just one other little thing you might want to try. Once you get it nice and clean, how about heading by the auto parts store and pick up some Armorall? You know, you use that and what it can do for your dashboard in your car. And maybe down on one of the lower pieces of vinyl, try that out on that. Just a light coat over it and let it dry and look at it. It may be that you want to do your whole house with Armorall. It doesn't cost that much. Does take a little bit of labor to do that. But we've done that before with vinyl shutters that have oxidized and look really bad. And it's amazing what it does to a dashboard in your car. It can do the same to your side. You might want to try that off to the side. That'll keep your husband from getting in trouble. It'll keep him busy, see? So. Good. Anyway, just thought I would share that with you. But thanks so much for being with us. Let's get right back to the line. We want to help as many people as we can this week. Tyler is on from Alabama. Tyler, welcome to the show, and tell us what you're thinking about there in that back porch.
Hey, you doing all right today?
Hey, we're doing great.
Yeah,
glad to have you on.
Good. Hey, I just had a question. I have a pergola over my back porch, you know, just has the, like, slats, and there's no roof. It's just open, and it's me and my wife wanted to put a roof on it. So we have the tin already. It's hard to explain, kind of, but I'll do it the best I can, I reckon. The slats going over the top, they are just 2x6s, and they're kind of notched out and set on top of the 2x8s,
right?
That are running from 6x6 to 6x6, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I don't know if I should just leave it like that and drop the whole thing and just put tin on top, or if I should cut all the wood up and make it more sturdy. Yeah, I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, we're in a hurricane area, you know, so I want to be as strong as possible and not float away in a month.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Well, I'll tell you something that I did on a pergola later on. You know, what happens a lot of times is, of course, you know, you're out on your deck or your patio and, you know, it's just the sun's beating down and you just start thinking, boy, if we could have just a little bit of a shade cover. So then you go and you build a pergola, which does provide a good bit of shade and does give you a little more time that you can spend out on that patio or deck. But then at some point, the rain starts messing with you,
right?
And people are looking for ways to make it a little more waterproof. What I did on one project at one time is I took what you mentioned, the 2x6s there on top, and I took some treated 2x4s and I ripped them from the full width of the 2x4 to nothing. So it created this little tapered strip, and then I screwed those to the top of the 2x6s, which essentially creates a little bit of a slope. So you're going, you know, 3.5 inches to nothing over the length of your pergola. Then I installed the metal roofing right over that and screwed all of it down, and it worked. I mean, it was very simple, worked very well, and also adds a little bit of rigidity and a little bit of strength to that pergola when you're screwing these panels over that. That may be one alternative that would make it a fairly simple to put that together. Now, it's possible, Tyler, you'll have to put some strips running, you know, perpendicular to those in order to accommodate the tin, just depending on which direction your 2x6s are going. But that's fairly simple, but I would use as many screws as you can just so that you have as much strength as you can on that. Joe, what do you think? Any other suggestions for Tyler?
Yeah, Tyler, I was thinking the same thing. Just cut a tapering shim that goes that whole length. How far off from the house does this pergola extend?
On the ends of the 2x6s that are on top, you know how they kind of cut a little edge off and make it look kind of, I don't know, like, you know, the ends of the pergola, they're kind of edged off.
Sure. So yeah. You have like a little Roman OG, kind of like an OG shape or an S shape cut into. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So one side of that is over my roof. It's like just hanging over my roof, and the other side's open just in the yard.
Right. Well, just get a 2x4 that's long enough, this long tapering shim kind of thing we're talking about. It's very best if you make it one long piece. I would put some construction adhesive underneath it. And you could make it 3.5 inches, but I don't know if it needs to be, you need that much pitch. You know, even just, you know, if you get a 2x6 and rip it, you can probably get 2 out of it. you know, at 2, 2.5 inches, but whatever. But the idea is you make a long tapering strip and you screw it to each one, then maybe go perpendicular, as Danny said, in between with a 2x4 just to help support the metal roofing so it doesn't sag down in between these. And I think that's all you need. And this is all pressure treated lumber, by the way. And I think that's all you need to do.
Yeah. All right.
Well, all right,
Tyler. That sounds better than my idea.
Well, good luck. I hope you have somebody to help you with that.
That's right. Grab someone to help you and get to work on that, Tyler.
I have somebody just in mind.
Good. There you go. We'll line them up, bribe them, whatever you need to, and get it done. That way, when it rains the next time, you can sit out there, enjoy all of that rain dancing off the roof.
All right. I appreciate y'all. Thank y'all.
Okay. All right. Our pleasure. Thanks a lot for being with us, and have a great weekend. You know, Joe, when you talk, we have so many people talking about metal roofing, both you know, areas like the back area there, which is a great way to provide a nice cover over your patio or whatever. And but boy, there are so many questions about metal roofing, and that's why our friends at the Metal Roofing Alliance, they have so much information on their website at metalroofing.com. And they actually have a free buyer's guide there that you can get. And I mean, it talks about all kinds of things, you know, when to re-roof, how to find the right roofer, how to choose the right metal, a lot of those different things. And of course, we have people with questions about, can I put a roof over an existing roof and all of that kind of thing. I think it's a pretty impressive website, including that visualizer, so that you can take a picture of your house and visualize what it would, what a particular metal roof would look like on your actual house.
Yeah, and the thing I like most about the website, the Metal Roofing Alliance website, is that, you know, they have lots of different styles of roof. If you're thinking of a metal roof, you're probably picturing the standard standing seam, which they certainly sell, and it's maybe the most popular. But they have shingles, and they have ones that look like tile. So, you know, if you're looking for a metal roof but want a more traditional look, they have that in metal, and you get the benefits of a metal roof.
Yeah. There's so many different ways that you can go on that, and one of the most popular selections that you have. So check out that buyer's guide. You'll be glad you did. Right now, we're headed down to Miami, Florida, and Keith's on the line with a question about another metal roof. Keith, welcome to the show, and let us know what's going on there.
Hey, Danny, Joe, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, man.
Yeah, of course.
We're thinking of replacing our existing asphalt shingle roof with a metal roof. And I was looking, the only two colors I really like are either white or silver. But in our neighborhood, I noticed that every single one of the white roofs has a really bad mold problem. I mean, super bad mold problem. I wanted white because I thought it might be more reflective and more energy efficient. But, you know, I also like the silver ones. Any idea what's causing the mold on all these roofs? If there is anything that can be done so it doesn't happen, or should I just go with the silver roofs and call it a day?
Great question, because it is kind of funny how, you know, when you see, like I say, going down a neighborhood, you have a lot of metal roofs and you're seeing, you know, some are holding up better than others. A lot of times that can be how close trees are, what kind of trees, all this kind of thing, quality of metal, all of those kind of things. But one thing for sure, if you're in, you know, an area that gets really hot, like Miami, having the lighter color certainly is going to reflect a lot more of the heat, even though all the metal roofs are great for energy efficiency there. But, Joe, I know we had something like this a while back, and I know you checked in with our friends at Metal Roofing Alliance. What did you find out on what could be the situation there?
Yeah, Keith, so the metal roofs that you're looking at, the white ones are stained with black mold, but the silver ones are not. That's that's the issue, right? Yeah. Well, yeah, I spoke with Renee Ramey, who's the director of the Metal Roofing Alliance, and she put me in touch with a gentleman who actually makes metal roofing. His name is Todd Miller, and he owns Isaiah Industries out in Ohio. They manufacture a product called Classic Metal Roofing. Anyway, Todd and I talked about this, and here's what he said. He and I agreed on what the problem probably is. Silver metal roofing is not painted, right? But it has a clear coat finish. So it has a clear finish on the surface that over time washes away. And what that does, of course, it exposes the bare metal, which is not good except for one regard. It contains zinc. And zinc, as we know, kills mold and mildew. So what happens is when that clear finish is washed away and the zinc is exposed, it, you know, the mold and mildew is less likely to grow. And what happens on a white metal roof, it has a painted finish. It has a white painted finish. And right. The mold and mildew is not actually growing on the paint, but what happens is the roof gets dirty, it gets dust and dirt, and then that creates a surface that promotes mold and mildew growth. So the mold and mildew is growing on the dirty surface, not really the painted surface itself. So, okay, that's great. So what do you do? Well, what you can do is either clean the roof. You know, if you have a white roof that's stained all the time, you just have to clean it more often than a silver roof. And as far as energy efficiency, white roofs are more energy efficient than silver roofs, except when they're dirty, right? So if they're covered with dust and dirt and debris, then they're not white anymore. So that's the reason, if you're going to make a decision, you might want to go to a white roof, keep it clean. And plus, painted metal roofing typically carries a stronger warranty than a silver roof. Those are reasons you might want to lean more toward the white roof as opposed to silver. And to clean it off, you know, you can just use, you know, you use a solution of laundry detergent and bleach and some water and just scrub it off and try to keep it clean. That's about the best you can do.
It's a pretty bad problem with my neighbor. He has to do it about every 6 months, get up on his roof, and he's not getting any younger, and he doesn't like the idea of getting up on his roof so much anymore. Is there anything he can do now to kind of prevent the mold from building up?
Well, Danny, that Wet and Forget, I think, has one of those garden hose attachments that he would be able to probably. This is a one-story house, Keith?
Yes.
Yeah, he could probably just spray it from the ground, right?
Yeah. This particular material hooks to a water hose and turn the water hose wide open. It sprays about 30 feet, so probably just get up on a step ladder and just spray that over the entire roof. You don't have to do anything but spray it on, leave it alone, and then it, over the period of months, will work to prevent any mold. It also has a residual effect that'll continue keeping the mold off. So you might recommend to him, go to wetandforget.com. To be able to buy the material. You can easily buy it right online.
Okay, well, you made my decision a little easier, I think.
Great. Good, Keith. Well, best of luck on that. Metal roof, can't go wrong on that. And we appreciate you being a part of the show this week.
Great. Thanks for the tips, guys.
All right, absolutely. Now's our time for my buddy Joe Truini to present yet another simple solution. What do you have, Joe?
All right, Danny, we were talking earlier about spending time outside on patios. And if you have wooden patio furniture, as a lot of people do, sometimes it doesn't sit perfectly level and it kind of wobbles back and forth, which is a big pain in the neck, especially if it's a table and you're putting drinks on it. And not only that, but also having wood sit right on concrete surface, you know, it'll wick up moisture, wet water and moisture from the concrete, and that could eventually rot the bottom of the table legs and chair legs. So here's a way to prevent that. Start by boring a 3/8-inch diameter hole into the bottom of each leg of the table or the bench or whatever it is. And you have to bore, you know, maybe, you know, an inch and a half deep or so, something like that. Then use a hammer to tap in a T-nut. If you don't know what a T-nut is, you can just go to a hardware store and ask them. It's a pretty common piece of hardware. It has internal threads and it has spikes. So when you hammer it in, it sticks in place and it fits into the hole and you just hammer it in. And then with the T-nut in place, you can thread in a hex head machine bolt. So you get a machine bolt that's the same thread size as the inside of that T-nut and you just thread it in. So for a chair, for example, you'd have four of these T-nuts and four bolts sticking out. What that does, first, you can allow... It allows you to lift the bench or the chair or whatever it is off the surface by, you know, even if it's just a quarter of an inch or 3/8 of an inch is plenty. And then if it's wobbly, you can let one bolt out, one bolt in or whatever to secure, to get a nice flat surface. So that's a simple solution using T-nuts and machine bolts to level out that furniture.
Boy, that is a simple solution and a very common problem too, because, you know, the wood furniture like that, maybe it's redwood, maybe it's treated wood, whatever, those legs really start looking bad. That's the first thing that usually starts looking bad. And it, you know, doesn't take long. Because the open grain of the wood, the nature of how those things are built, I mean, it's just like a sponge. And rarely is there enough sealer or stain or anything to coat, you know, a coating to keep that moisture from wicking up in there. And boy, like you say, a 1/4-inch, 3/8 of an inch is all you need, and the ability to level that up to keep it from wobbling. Perfect time of the year to be mentioning a simple solution like that.
Yeah, and as you said, that's the end grain, which is very porous. So while you've got these things upside down, you're drilling the holes, soak the end grain, soak the ends of those legs with any clear wood preservative. If it's stained, if the furniture is stained, you can stain it the same material. I guess you could paint it if the furniture is painted, but of course the paint will probably flake off, but it might offer some protection. But yeah, you definitely, whatever you can do to keep water from soaking up into that end grain will make this furniture last a lot longer.
Well, they're always great, simple solutions, and we'd love to remind you to head over to todayshomeowner.com/simplesolutions, and you can see video versions of the simple solution, over 550 of them waiting on you right now. Again, todayshomeowner.com/simplesolutions. Hey, it's time for our podcast question of the week. Hey, we'd love to get a question from you. All you have to do is go to todayshomeowner.com/podcast. This came in from Mark in Crystal Springs, Mississippi. I just bought my first house and I'm about to install some engineered wood flooring. Now, according to the installation instructions, the last row of flooring must not be less than half the width of the planks. And the planks I'm using are 5 inches wide. But the instructions don't tell you how to determine the width of that last row. Can you please tell me how I can figure that out? Joe, that's one of those things that, right. Man, it's so important. I don't care what kind of flooring you do. That initial layout is going to define the success of the project just about more than anything else. What would you say to Mark on these first steps in installing this wood floor?
Yeah, Mark is right. They tell you what to do, but they don't tell you how to do it. And it's really important. You don't want to just start with a full width plank and just hope when you get to the end, the last row is wide enough because it's going to affect how the floor behaves and acts over the years. So what you have to do first, measure the width of the room. And in Mark's case, you're going to measure the width and divide by 5, which is the width of the plank. And that'll give you the number of full width planks plus any fraction. So let's say the room is 9.5 feet wide, right? Which is 114 inches. Divide 114 by 5 and you get 22.8. So the planks in the last row will be 0.8 inches wide or 4 inches, which is fine. He has to have that last, in his case, that last plank, those planks have to be at least 2.5 inches. So he knows it's going to be at least 4 inches. Fine, he can start. Now, if this was a small room and you're doing tiling, maybe you want the first tile and the last tile to be the same width. In a case like this, in a wide room, you're never going to tell that you started with a full width plank that's 5 inches and the last row is 4 inches. So I would just start, in this case, again, I'd start with a full width plank. The last plank is 4 inches. That's plenty. Now, if he measured it and he discovered that the last row is less than 2.5 inches, then what he has to do is reduce the width of that first plank. So he says, rip some off the first plank, which will, of course, widen the last plank. And again, they don't have to be exact. As long as they're more than 2.5 inches wide, he's fine. So that's basically how you do it. Pretty simple math. But, you know, measure everything and check it and make sure. Because, again, you don't want to get to the end and realize you have a narrow strip of flooring.
There you go. Just a little math 101 there from Joe Truini is all you need to do. Mark, best of luck to you on that project. I know it'll be a success and nothing like the beauty of some nice engineered wood flooring. Hey, we would love to hear from you. You can ask us a question. You can give us a comment or, you know, comment on something that you'd like to hear on the podcast. Or you might even have a great tip that's worked well around your house. Why don't you share it with us? Because we'd love to share it with all of our podcast listeners. And again, that email address that you can go to is todayshomeowner.com/podcast to leave us anything that you'd like to there. And again, always each week I try to make sure that I say thank you for all of the wonderful reviews. We've got a lot of great things going, a lot of wonderful people listening to our podcast each week. And we appreciate each and every one of you. I'm Danny Lippert along with my buddy Joe Truini. Thanks for listening to this Today's Homeowner Podcast.